Mrs. Muyanga holds a Bachelor of Arts in Social Work. She also holds a Master's in Social Work Management from the University of Pretoria. And she has been a senior lecturer since 1996 at the University of Namibia with subjects like working with individuals, community work, social work management, youth and child issues, and conflict management. And beside this, Mrs. Muyanga is very engaged in the topic we are going to hear this evening. She serves as the chairperson of the Ovaherero Genocide Committee since 2005. And we are very surprised that you even put on a specific Herero dress, and we really appreciate this. But now I ask you to give you a lecture, and afterwards we will have time to discuss your questions. And I also want to say that we have a little exhibition from Postcolonial and also from our association Isibindi. And as we mentioned before, the presentation will be free, so there is no entrance fee you have to pay, but we would like to ask you to donate for the work of our association Isibindi for a project in Namibia afterwards. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Prof. Seibel. Thank you, everyone, for making time to be with us this evening. As you heard, my name is Esther, and I will talk about what happened 106 years ago in Namibia. By then, it was known as Southwest Africa. The issue of the genocide, I think one can look at it from different perspectives. You know, one can look at it from a political point of view. You can look at it from a humanistic, moral point of view. You can also look at it from human rights approach. Now, since I heard that, I am under the understanding that it's not an issue which is well known in Germany. It's not an issue which people really discuss in Germany. I'm not going to present an academic paper. I simply want to look at what really happened 106 years ago and how are we organizing ourselves as descendants of the victims of the genocide of 1904. So as Prof. Seibel said, I will go through my presentation, and then after that, the floor will be open to ask questions or to make comments. I'm going to talk about an issue which is very close to my heart, an issue which is very emotional to us, an issue which we also think is very sensitive, but is not given the sensitivity it deserves. A lot of people usually ask, but why do we need to have an Ovaherero Genocide Committee? Why do we need to talk about that? We will see now. Now, the first picture that I have there, we see people standing, and those are the German soldiers. And on the ground, these are corpses of people who have been killed. Now, when one look at the German Ovaherero War, some people say, but it was, the Hereros were rebellious. They started first, and therefore, as Germans, we did not have any other way as to protect ourselves. That's how some people argue. From our side, we are saying that we were found in our country. We were living on land. We were having cattle. But the German people came and they started to rob our people from their land and their cattle. And they felt that they have to protect themselves the one or the other way. They became tired, and on the 12th of January 1904, the chief of the Waherero people then said, I'm tired of this, and now we will fight the Germans. Some people are saying, but it was war. And if it was war, why should people be, you know, asking for any compensation or any justification if it was war? Some people are saying, but it was genocide. And we also believe it was genocide because there are many definitions in the international laws that define what a genocide is. Genos means, or it stands for, a tribe or an ethnic group, and side is killing. So there should be a purpose to kill a specific group of people. And there was a purpose to get rid of the Waherero people, and that is why we look at it as genocide. The 1948 Convention on the Genocide, you know, came later after the war of 1904-1908. But for us, maybe the term genocide did not exist then, but murder took place. Killings took place. People were murdered. So for us, murder is murder, whether it has happened yesterday, 2 years ago, or 100 years ago. This man, General Adrian Dietrich Lothar von Trotta, is the man who read the extermination order. It was not his order. He read and carried out the order on behalf of the German government. By the time when he went to Namibia, which was Southwest Africa then, he was in China. But he was called special from China to go to Namibia to deal with these blacks who were not, you know, giving in. And he was well known to deal with blacks because before he went to China, he was in Tanzania, where he also committed some atrocities. Now, we are saying that our genocide, of course, is the first one in the 20th century, sorry. And we are saying it is unique. It's unique in the sense that it was made public, and it was directed directly, and it was read to the targeted group. So it was specific. The Germans then knew that there were not only Hereros in Namibia. There were Damaras, Namas, Kalas, and so on and so on. But this order was specifically targeting the Waherero people. And that is why we are saying the intention was so clear that the Germans wanted to get rid of the Waherero people. And the order did not spare women and children. It was for everyone who was Waherero speaking. And that is how the order read. I, the great general of the German soldiers, address this letter to Waherero people. The Waherero are no longer considered German subjects. They have murdered, stolen, cut off ears, noses, and other parts from wounded soldiers, and now refuse to fight on out of cowardice. I have this to say to them: whoever turns over one of the captains to one of my garrisons as a prisoner will receive 1,000 marks. And he who hands over Samuel Maharero will be entitled to a reward of 5,000 marks. The Waherero people will have to leave this country. Otherwise, I shall force them to do so by means of guns. Within the German boundaries, every Waherero whether found armed or unarmed, with or without cattle, will be shot. I shall not accept any more women and children. I shall drive them back to their people. Otherwise, I shall order shots to be fired at them. These are my words to the Herero people. Now, if you look at the order alone, you start wondering, why was there a need for us or for my people not to be considered as German subjects? And since when have we become subjects of Germans, you know? And where to should we go? Where to where my people were supposed to be driven to? Because he's saying that within the German boundaries. So they came from Europe, went to Africa, and made that their own territory. And where were we supposed to be going? What did Samuel Maharero said on the contrary? He said, I want to make it clear that we attack farmers, traitors, and soldiers only. But we spare women, children, missionaries, and non-Germans. I see some human in his instructions. Why farmers? Because the farmers took his people's cattle and land, as well as the traitors, and the soldiers killed his people. But he said, but women and children are not doing that. We should spare them. I think for someone who was considered to be uncivilized, he was a bit human. Now, what really happened during 1904? A lot of things happened. Expropriation of valuable assets, such as land and cattle. Rape of Herero women on a daily basis. If you look at me, I look a bit light of complexion, isn't it? And that's because my paternal great-grandfather was German. And it's not because my great-grandmother wanted to make love to this person. She was raped. She was forced. We have a word in Oshiro which says Mongora. And that word is like, Mongora is like, you need to beg a bit. And that's what happened. The soldiers will come, found the women busy doing washing or whatever, and they will come and say Mongora. And then the women knew that what is next to happen. So a lot of kids were born. They grow up without fathers. That's something else on its own. It's a psychological deprivation on that child. Growing up without knowing who is my father. But they survived. A lot of killings took place. People were hanged. And they were also forced to do hard labor. They were starved to death. These are my people that I'm talking about. These are human beings who were alive. They are not dead, but they look like skeletons. They were starved to death. They looked like that because they were put under difficult conditions. Women were hanged naked. So, from a human right perspective, their privacy was also violated. Was it not enough to hang them at least with dignity on clothes on them? But maybe the perspective was different. And the German soldiers did not look at them as human beings, but maybe as something else. And they did not have dignity because they were not being seen as human beings, and they were hanged naked. As the author said that, I will not spare women and children, we see children here, they were also hanged. Now, what did these poor kids do to deserve that? Execution took place in the presence of women and children. And one can just imagine standing there watching someone that you know very well being hanged. It was traumatic for my people. Children were chained, they were imprisoned, and one really wonder, what was the need to put these kids under these difficult circumstances, to chain them? Was it not enough to keep them as prisoners of war and not chain them? Was it nice, did they enjoy to put pain on these people? This is mass execution. A lot of people brought together and being executed. We still have some trees in Namibia, and it's very funny, and we're always asking, but after so many years, how happened that these trees are still, you know, there, and they are still, you know. When we started with the commemorative events, and as the oral history, Hereros like to tell stories, and they will tell their kids about what happened. And so people knew that at these specific trees is where executions and hangings took place. And we still have those trees. And we are working on it now to see how we can preserve those trees for the generation to come. This could have been my forefathers and brothers who have been kept as prisoners of war, with chains on their necks, and then they were also, you know, tied to one another. Maybe that was a way of preventing them to run away, or I don't know. These are women who were also forced to do hard labor. And one can really see that they did exactly as the author said. Women, children, men, everyone should not be spared. Women were forced to dig graves and to bury their own people. This is a corpse there, and we see the two German soldiers. So, you know, these pictures are black because they were taken 106 years ago. Now one can imagine the trauma that my people went through. You know, having a corpse there, knowing that this could have been my brother, my uncle, my whoever, a friend, or even husband or a lover who has been killed, and you know under which circumstances that person has been killed, and now you are even being forced to bury that person. So it was also psychological trauma for my people. Our fathers and brothers were forced on railway construction. They were forced to do these railways. They did not know that the one or the other time it will be the same railway that will be used to take them to other African countries to be sold as slaves. Children, of course, as we have seen in the other pictures, were also not spared, and they were exposed to harsh living conditions. Maybe those days we did not have children's rights, or even if we had children's rights, maybe black kids were not supposed to have rights. You can still see the malnutrition signs on the kids. The harsh conditions also, where people are having chains on their necks. Despite all this, it seems that on the other side, there was a lot of celebrations, you know, enjoying their dinners and enjoying their drinks while my people were suffering. And this is when they were being taken and deported to other countries, such as Togo and Cameroon. And it's very interesting that in Berlin, there's a group of more or less 200 people from Cameroon And they also read the history and they traced and they could trace that their forefathers and mothers came from Namibia. We are in very much contact with one another because we are looking at one another as brothers and sisters, and we are mobilizing ourselves as a group. Experiments were carried out on our people. Those are the skulls as they were packed to be transported to Germany. The issue of the skulls is something which is very, very sensitive to us because death is a very sensitive issue to an African. But I think it's not only to an African, because sometimes you also see in the Western societies or the white societies that they, if someone dies, they will cremate, you know, burn the body and keep the ash. And they took that ash and keep it in their homes. And I think it's to keep memories of that person. So we also have our own way of keeping those memories. And sometimes when we bury someone, we say, rest in peace. And why are we saying that? Because we want the spirit to rest. My people's spirit is not resting because their bodies are scattered all over and we don't even know where. Their spirits are not buried or resting in peace because some of their skulls are here. The other day when I came, I was taken to one of the universities here in Freiburg, where they apparently are also keeping some of the skulls. That's a very sensitive, very emotional issue to us. It is very high on our agenda at the moment, the return of the skulls. There were a lot of discussions and debate in Namibia. Should we bury them or should we not? The traditional leaders are strongly feeling that we should not bury the skulls, but we should keep them at a very special place where the generation to come can also see what happened few years ago. The Namibian government wanted them to be buried at the Heroes Acre, but we said no. If they could have been kept for more than 100 years in Germany, why should we bury them? In Namibia, we are busy, or the government is busy building the Independence Memorial Museum, and we are in the agreement that if they eventually being returned to Namibia, they will be kept in a special room where the schools and especially history teachers can, you know, take their learners there as part of reference on the history of what happened. But for us, it's not only about the skulls. What happened to the flesh, the face, the ears, the nose, the eyes? We want to know. We don't know who will give us that answer. But what we want to know, what happened to the flesh? The skulls were brought to Germany because Dr. Eugene Fischer wanted to prove the inferiority of a black person to a white person. We want to see the research findings. We want to see whether he could really prove that we are so inferior to the white person. If the findings are there, we want to make use of other scientists to see whether they will have the same findings as the findings that Eugene could get. He did not only wanted skulls to be sent to Germany. He went to Namibia as well, and he dig out bodies, especially of the Nama people. He cut off the heads, and he brought those heads to Germany. That's another crime on its own. Digging the graves is a crime on its own. We also want to know, how do they identify the skulls? Because at the moment, we understand that they are busy identifying the skulls. Apparently, they have identified some positive as skulls that have come from Namibia. We want to know, what test are they using to identify the skulls? Because we don't want to get any skull. We want skulls of our people. I don't want skulls that were brought in from Australia or Tanzania. So we want to see and hear, because it's not a matter of getting rid of the skulls and send them back. We understand that the German government is ready to repatriate the skulls. Is this readiness including the research findings? Is this readiness including the flesh? Is this readiness including the gender of these skulls? Because if you do a test, DNA or any other test, you could determine whether it was a female, male, or a child. We also want to hear the age of these people. And you can determine that by doing the various tests. I said earlier on that death is something very sensitive to us. If someone died and we have to go and bury this person, we don't bury them in the cities, we take them to the village. But we will not ask the undertaker to transport the body. We do that ourselves. And that body will not be put in a car and driven to the village. Some 2-3 women will be in the same car. And that is why we are saying, we don't want the skulls to be put in boxes and sent to Namibia. We want to come here and receive the skulls. We want to come here and do our rituals. At the moment, the feeling that we have is that the German government is not comfortable with the rituals. It's unfortunate we have different beliefs. You know, when I pass here, I cannot remember the water. The story of if you fall into the water, you will get a German husband and remain here. That's your belief, isn't it? And so do we have our beliefs. We also believe that when we receive these skulls, we want to talk to our ancestors. We want to come and tell them that we are here. Because we have our own way of doing that. It's peaceful. It will not create any, you know, attention. It's only to come and say, Tate temba, tuyekupa hoyuru yetu. That's what we want to do. To talk to our ancestors and tell them that we are in Germany collecting the skulls of our people who were killed. It is our belief that the return of the skulls might contribute to the reconciliation process. Because it's very funny, something that happened 100 years ago, the way how we get emotional about it. We never mourn our people. We never grieve about our people. And by receiving the skulls, having the rituals, will help us to make peace as well. And that is how we want the German government to understand. Maybe to try to look at the whole issue from our perspective. And this is purely a cultural, ritualistic perspective. Now, after all the pictures that we have seen, and the pictures are many, you know, it's too many pictures that one can get. What happened next? After the altar and all these atrocities were committed, I know that during that time there were also some Germans who were not happy with this. You know, it's not every German who said, let's go for it and kill all these blacks. There were some who said, you know, they are not in agreement, they don't feel good about this, and so on and so on. So what then happened was that the extermination order was amended. They stopped and they said, okay, no further raping and killings and so on. But the extermination continued in what they thought is a very soft way of doing it. Now, people were captured and they were put into concentration camps. And thousands of people died in the concentration camps. Because imagine if you have a place like this and you put 5,000 people in such a small place, what will happen? That concentration camp was the only place that these people knew. They could not go out of it. There were no medical services. There were no bathrooms, if you know what I'm referring to. So if nature called, whatever, everything was there. So it was another way of traumatizing these people. And there were a lot of concentration camps all over Namibia. The Shark Island is the one which is more popular. Shark Island, the one in Windhoek, and Swakopmund. So again, people died because of bad treatment, diseases, starvation. You can imagine the unhygienic condition. This is how some of them looked, concentration camps. That's also another picture of a concentration camp. I'm very proud of my people. They survived all these harsh conditions. There are some of them. And they managed to flee, and they went to neighboring countries like South Africa, Botswana, and Angola. And when it was, you know, a little bit peaceful, they started to come back to Namibia. Children were also kept in concentration camps where they were also exposed to all these harsh conditions. Now, because of all these things that happened, 2003, in all the years, we never thought of the genocide. We never thought of all these atrocities, because immediately after the colonization of the Germans, we were immediately colonized by South Africa. So there was no time to think about all this. The time that was there was to fight for the liberation struggle and to get independence. And then after independence, we tried to find our feet and to be stabilized. But again, we believe, and that is our belief, that somehow, somewhere, the spirits were asking, why are you guys quiet? Why are you not doing anything? And it just happened, you know. We just started to talk about, but do you know, guys, the order was 1904, so 2004, this extermination order will turn 100 years. We need to do something. And so we started to mobilize ourselves, the community, and we came together. It was also not a topic which was well known amongst the Ovairos themselves, especially the young generation. Now, the person who was behind all this is that huge, tall Herero man there. And he is the paramount chief of the Ovairero people. Some people know him very well. He can be very controversial. He can speak his mind, and he doesn't care whether you agree with what he's saying or not. I remember 2004, we went for a conference in Bremen, and he was allowed to do the opening statement. And in his statement, he used the word genocide, and then he was called to withdraw the word genocide and to use another word. And then he said, "Icon, I'm not going to do it. If you want me to withdraw the word genocide, then you are committing another second genocide." So that's the man. And he passed a motion in the Namibian parliament, which was adopted by all the political parties. And that somehow also brought the Namibian government closer to the issue. He took the case to the state's courts. The German government did not believe, they could not believe that one single person has got the guts to take the German government to the state's courts. Of course, nothing came out of the court case because the U.S. state said that they don't have jurisdiction and all this. We did not leave it there. We are working very hard on it, exploring other avenues to see what is the best way to do it. We have some lawyers as friends who are, you know, guiding and helping us into this. And this old man signed what we call as Odhombudho Vindimba Declaration. Odhombudho Vindimba is the place where the order was read. When von Trotta read the order, they built a very huge, tall sand hill. It's amazing. The hill is still there. It's not that high anymore, but it's still there. We managed to get funding to build a monument at that place, and we want to see how we can keep that monument for the generation to come. And in his declaration, he's saying that, "I will not rest until justice prevails." And he believes that even if he dies, Aluta continue, the struggle will still go on. So as I said, the history was less known also, and we started with education, awareness creation, and also mobilization. We wanted at least the people to know. So people in Namibia started to know what happened, and it was not only under the Obaherero people, but every Namibian get to know what is happening. Currently, we have signed a memorandum of understanding with the Nama people because they also went through these atrocities. We are working very closely together. And we are happy about that because we are now becoming a strong force to fight the struggle. That is one of the events that we had in 2004. That is Ohamakari. For those who know the history, Ohamakari is the place where we were defeated and where we fled, you know, where we said we cannot stand these machineries. We just have to run now. And so they started to flee to all these neighboring countries. We managed to attract more than 10,000 people at this event. And your minister then, Heite Mari. Yeah, that difficult surname that I cannot pronounce. She was there as well. She attended. That is also part of the people who came to the gathering. The man that you see next to the paramount chief is the king of the Ondonga people. And he came, we invited him because his king then in 1904 was one of the people, when Samuel Maharero wrote letters to other tribes, he said, "People come, help me to fight the Germans." This was the only tribe that responded, and they came. But on their way to the central part of Namibia, they were defeated at what is now known as Namutoni. Although Indimba is the place where the altar was read, we go there every year and we have our annual commemorations there. It's the place that we want to develop into a monument now. If you still go there, the first time, 2004, when we were cleaning the place and we were digging a hole to put in all the rubbish, we could, you know, we came across some human bones. It's a very emotional place, this one, for us as well. Literally, people cry when we have our events at this place. We have full participation of women in all this because during 1904, women participated a lot. Those who travel to Namibia, sometimes when you go to Oshisirantu in August, you hear women saying, you know, it was when the men were fighting, the women were there and they would say, Ovita, Ovita. And the German soldiers could not understand. They thought that, but how could these women sing and dance while we are killing, you know? But they were not. It was a way of encouraging the men. They were telling them that it's war. You guys should fight. So it was not dancing. So women are actively involved and participating in all the events. That was your minister when she came and she apologized. And we are asking, did she really apologize? We don't think so. Because she made her speech and she was there in her official capacity representing the German government. After her statement, she said, what von Trotter did could be seen in today's terms as genocide. And I want to apologize. We can use that and say the German government apologized. But since it was not in an official statement, we are also questioning, did she apologize or was it because people ask her, where is the apology? And then at that moment she said, my apology. President Pohamba is the current president in Namibia. By then he was the president-elect. And he also accepted the apology. And we said, but as what did he accept the apology? So that is questionable. We ask courage. The man that you see there with a stick is a spiritual leader. He's the man who will talk to the ancestors. He's the man who will tell them what we are busy doing. We believe they are hearing us. We believe they give us courage to continue. And we will continue asking their blessings and courage. These are some of the things that we have done. We had a lot of talks with the African Global Congress. These are also is a group of African Americans, Caribbeans, who are also looking at the history of the past. We had various radio talks on the United States of America radios, various of them, especially the Inner Light radio family. We had various interviews on the BBC. We have friends in the States, in the United States. We have created a website. The address is that one. We had various petitions. Now you might wonder why of a Herero Genocide Association, USA. We have a group of Hereros living in the USA. They also have formed a committee, a movement, and we are working very closely with one another. And when we send our petitions, we mostly make use of them. We have lectures like this one, and I'm very grateful for Prof. Seibel to have organized this one. There were some various papers that were also presented at various occasions. Now, the impact, I'm moving towards finishing. What is the impact of the genocide on the Herero people? Reduction in number. According to the history books, 1904, the Hereros were like 100,000 people. After the war, we reduced to 15,000. And that make my people to be marginalized, politically, socially, as well as culturally. Politically in the sense that if 100 years ago we were 100,000, we could have been double or, you know, more than that by now. And we could have, you know, been playing a very active in the Namibian politics. It's unfortunate that in the African politics, you know, a lot of political parties are based on ethnicity. And that makes us to be a very marginalized group, a very little group. And politically, we feel that we are being marginalized. Socially as well, culturally as well, especially our people whose forefathers and mothers left to countries like South Africa. There is a place called Lepalela, I think it's Transvaal. Yeah, all close to Botswana. They are living, Hereros who are living there, they have lost their culture. They cannot speak the language. And if you have lost your culture, it's like you have lost your identity because you don't know who you are. The land issue is a problem currently in Namibia. A lot of farms belong to German-speaking Namibians. The feeling is that that is our land, which was grabbed from our people, which the Germans in Namibia are enjoying. There are farms in Namibia that belongs to Germans who are living in Germany, who will only visit their farms when it is time to hunt. Is that fairness? It's totally not fair at all. And we are all put in small communal rural areas where we have to live. The cattle, you need land to have cattle, and cattle is the wealth of the Herero people. Like what Luting is saying, that due to the loss of these cat or sacred animals, the tribal religion fell into decay, and naturally with it, a great part of the tribal culture. That is in his book, The Religious System and Social Organization of the Herero. Very old book of 1933, but very useful. So, when we talk about the genocide, for us, it's something which we consider to be very serious. We are not playing. We are working, we have our professions. We could have been doing something else, but it's something which is very close to our hearts. Did the war come to an end? That's another question. What constitutes an end to a war? There was no announcement from the German government then that the war has come to an end. Can we assume that the war is still on? There was no any peace treaty that was signed to signify that the war has come to an end. Can we assume that the war is still on? Did the closure of the concentration camps, because in 1908, the German government then decided that was in March, that we should take all the people out of the concentration camps. And they decided that come the 28th of May, 1908, everyone should be out of the concentration camps. Does that signify the end of the war? I have no answer for that. the audience can think for themselves whether the war has come to an end or not. Maybe the war is still on. Not a war of gun machineries, but maybe a war of recognizing that atrocities were committed in the past. Maybe the war of forcing the German government to come to dialogue with all the stakeholders. We don't want the German government to say, we are putting already a lot of money into the Namibian government. That's a bilateral agreement between the two governments. And that has got nothing to do with what happened to my people. We want to sit with the German government. We want to say how we feel. We want to express our feelings. I think that's only part of nation building, peace building, and reconciliation. And maybe we still have the war of correcting the past, the wrongdoings of the past. How we correct that should come out of the discussions and the dialogues that we will have with one another. But as long as the German government decides that we will come up with a special initiative to benefit all affected groups, we will not shut our mouth. Because at the moment it's a matter of discussing us, it's about us, without us. And that is also provoking emotions. In conclusion, I want to thank you all for being here and listening to me. I thank you all in advance for your support, whether it is technical, material, financial, or whatever. I want to see young German youth standing up and saying, something should happen. We are looking for solidarity. We are mobilizing. We are soliciting support. I also want to say a special word of thanks to Prof. Sabel in particular for organizing this and all the publicity. And in general, to the community of the Evangelische Hochschule Freiburg. I thank you.